This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash.
Amidst pain, frustration, and anger at another New York City police killing of unarmed black youth, tens of thousands demand justice for Sean Bell. We present the sounds and sentiments of the December 16th Shopping for Justice March down Fifth Avenue. An overwhelmingly black throng of community residents poured into Midtown Manhattan streets to rebuke the New York City Police Department's shooting of Sean Bell and wounding of Trent Benefield and Joseph Guzman. The historic pain at the loss of another black youth at the hands of city police was palpable and provided a marked contrast to the almost exclusively white browsers and shoppers of luxury jewels and cloths at Tiffany's and Bertolf Goodman along the line of the march. Amidst this tale of two cities, the stark reality of racial and class disparities bumped heads. While there was a decided absence of white activists, reflecting once again the racial divide, the prevalent sentiment that swept all who attended the march was the unity of purpose by the black community that racial killings at the hands of the police must successfully be prosecuted, and the systematic inequalities of policing communities of color must be addressed. We bring you the protest sounds and sentiments of demonstration participants such as Abner Luima, Ted Shaw from the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund, the Reverend Calvin Butts, SEIU Local 1199 Leadership, and many others, along with the sounds of justice that echoed forth from the protest participants.
36, 37, 38, 39, 50. We're with George Gresham, Secretary Treasurer of 1199, that's playing a critical role at the demonstration for justice for Sean Bell, and I know that because I can see all their colors in full display for blocks to come. So why is it so critical for a labor union to come out for social justice, human rights, for Sean Bell?
We represent our members in many different areas, and we've always had the philosophy that there's more than one way to take care of the members. It's not just good enough to negotiate good wages and good benefits. You have to also make sure that the services in the community, in this particular case, the police, are something that takes care of their families as well. And our members in 1199 live in many of the communities that often have these problems, and so it's our obligation to get involved in these type of issues. Our organization paid for Sean Bell's funeral. But it was prior to us even know that his mother was a member of our union. We did not even realize that at the time. And so we have, if you will, a special obligation to the mother. We just, in our executive board meeting yesterday, took a collection that we want to give to the family to try to help them get through the holiday seasons. But just like all of our members, we're here for her. And in particularly in this situation, we think that we have the whole city involved in this time.
1199's always played a leading role in these community issues. But in this case, I believe that other unions are involved also, that there's a coalition.
Absolutely. This is an issue for all working people because, let me say this, that under Bloomberg, we appreciate the tone that he has set when this incident first happened. We think there's a marked difference between the way he reacted to this versus the way that Giuliani reacted when Amadou Diallo was shot. But at the same time, under his leadership, this did happen. So it's not a question of the mayor. It's not a question of the police. It's a question of the protocol and the structure and the consequences that happens when these type of bad actions do occur.
It is deja vu all over again. It has a historic significance. So what do you think the habitual question, what needs to be done to make police less prone to profiling, less stereotypical in their response to policing communities of color?
First of all, they have to be more comfortable with the community. Oftentimes that means you need to come from the community itself. When you live in distant communities that do not represent people like the people that live in the city of New York, when you come here, then there's a natural fear that takes over people and they see people as criminal or as the stereotypes that go out. So that's the first thing. The second thing is there needs needs to be protocol and structural changes. What are the real situations when officers are allowed to fire their guns? And what is the consequence? What is the real evidence that needs to be witnessed in order for that to happen? And with just having the protocol without real consequences to that, I think is the beginning of the problem. I think that the officers here, if they had in the back of their mind, have thought that they'll be held to pay if, in fact, I shoot this gun and I shoot an innocent victim, people will make the second thought, make better judgments as to when they're going to use their firearms. I certainly believe the police have a right to protect themselves, but not against innocent law-abiding citizens.
What's your assessment of the investigation as it proceeded so far?
I'm hopefully optimistic that this demonstration today is going to provide truth and justice. On the other hand, experience has told me that that's not going to be the case. And so we're out here today with thousands of people to make sure that we bring light to a situation and so that it can't be hidden in the dark.
There are those who try to suggest that issues of race in these shootings are merely perception versus reality. Your own perspective?
Well, that's obviously not from a person of color. It is not perception at all. It is reality here. And I have to tell you, my youngest child is a 17-year-old high school student, and I worry as much about his interaction with the police oftentimes as I do with criminal element in society, and that ought not be. This is not a perception. This is reality. And I assure you, no person of color, no one who's ever been in this kind of situation can believe that this is not reality. It absolutely is.
And again, I have to thank you for being with us, and I can see those golden yellow and purples, the colors of SEIU 1199 stretched out. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for being here, and thank you for covering this and bringing this information out so people know where to come and express their outrage. Thank you.
We're here with the Reverend Calvin Butts, certainly no stranger to this kind of tragedy. A march, yes, but what is to be done?
As I've said earlier, this is my last march. Everything from this point, if we do not get a reaction from the mayor and the police commissioner especially, will be disruptive direct action. We're here today, and we're saying, pay attention. You've got to take a look at the things that we want. Much of this came out of the Amadou Diallo shooting, but we're presenting it again. We'll give you perhaps a month to articulate your concern for our concern. And if not, we will just escalate, and we will continue with more disruptive action until people understand that by virtue of our humanity and citizenship, no one in New York City should be treated this way. Now, we're not trying to indict the entire police department, but we are saying that there are enough police officers who must be disciplined to make sure that this kind of thing does not happen again.
And what needs to be done, not only in the case of Sean Bell, but in case of future cases like this?
One, we ought to have extensive training in terms of the cultural diversity of New York for our police officers. Two, the officers involved in this shooting must be disciplined. If they are allowed to walk, we will see major disruption in New York City.
Reverend, there are those who try to distract from the issue of racial bias and racial animus and say it's merely a question of perception because it was a cop of African ancestry involved. Help people understand who perceive it as just an incident rather than something that is systemic when it comes to policing in communities of color.
What we're faced with is not just one incident of Sean Bell. We're faced with Michael Stewart and Eleanor Bumpers and Sean Glover and Yvonne Smallwood and Michael Griffin and so many. So there's a pattern. I can tell you of a senior citizen who was parked at a traffic light two nights ago. And when the police officer turned on his siren and moved past her, he gave her the finger. I mean, it's blatant disrespect. Now, I will say this, that the police officer's race often doesn't matter because it's a cultural thing. We've seen black police officers as insensitive toward black people and others as white police officers. So there's a culture in the department that needs to be dealt with, but there is no question about institutional racism. If you look at the incidents that have taken place over the last decade and more, you will always see, with maybe one exception, that they have been young black men or older black women.
Do we need a special prosecutor in this case? And should there be special prosecutors in all such cases?
Yes. One of the demands that we are presenting is that there must be a special prosecutor in this case, and there must be a special prosecutor appointed for all such cases.
And what does that say about the glacial pace with which D.A. Brown's office is moving? After all, most people do realize by now it takes a minimal level of evidence to present to a grand jury. There's an indictment, and then the case continues to be investigated and developed for trial.
It's an excellent analogy when you say it's a glacial movement. We want to move this thing on a lot more rapidly. When you look at what D.A. Brown is doing, there's no real intention of indicting these police officers. There's no real intention of investigating them. This is all a sham. This is a joke. We cannot tolerate this any longer. And we're not people to be played with. You just can't smile with us. Giuliani, we didn't like him because he was rough. But you knew where Giuliani stood. You just knew that he was a racist. He is. But now we're dealing with a man who's smiling at us and doing nothing, and that's worse.
The Reverend Herbert Daughtry was a little wary the other day and a little tired, being the foot soldier habitually for black justice, human rights in this city. But he said that one of the differences now was there was a coalescing on the part of a significant leadership in this city, which could make a critical difference in seeking justice for Sean Bell, Trent Benefil, and for Joseph Guzman.
This coalition is certainly to seek justice for the three names just mentioned, but it's a lot bigger than that.
Amen.
It's a lot bigger than that. It's a lot bigger than that. The men and women who are gathering today really understand that this was a terrible thing that happened, but there are so many names that can be called, so many incidents that have taken place, and we recognize that this is really a coalition that demands and wants change. This is the last march. You know, everything after this, it's like James Baldwin said, it's the fire next time. And people have got to get that in their heads. This is not a joke. People are sitting around. They figure, well, tomorrow we'll come, we'll go shopping. Maybe, you know, they will. But it will not be the end of it. And we will see this again. And lastly, let me just say this. I say this about everything. If you don't check it now, it will not stop in the black community.
That's right. That's
it will
right.
go into every community in this city, and people will note that their civil rights are being eroded, and they would wish that they had been here today.
Thank you, Reverend Butts.
Thank you.
Actually, we got Councilmember John Liu and Councilmember Al Van. Al, you have been on more of these marches for at least 30 years. Randy Evans, Clifford Glover, and on and on. Here we go again.
Yeah, I go back to the 60s when Arthur Miller was in my political consciousness, was the first black that was killed by the police. And that was the beginning of my involvement with marches and struggles and demonstrations and civil disobedience. And yet we have not gotten any fundamental reform or changes in police policy or procedures that would guarantee the safety of innocent black people, primarily Latino people in the city. So there's a lot of hope and expectation that this time, the brutal and the nature of this particular killing, I think all decent New Yorkers know that this is an injustice. And I'm hoping that that pressure will force some changes both legislatively and within the policies of the New York Police Department to guarantee not another innocent person, black, Latino, or otherwise, will be subject to the whim of individual police persons who may be racist, who may be culturally insensitive, who are able to carry out their prejudice and their discrimination without knowing that there will be consequences if they do.
You were part of the founding of the Black United Front during a period where there was much more cohesion and militancy directed at the system. Lest I be cynical and negative, shopping for justice, what else needs to be done to say exactly that? Enough is enough is enough. What's our program? What's our platform?
Well, first of all, the street action should not just be that of the black community or of the Latino community. I think it should be felt by all the advocates throughout the city of New York. However, that must be complemented with appropriate action from the legislative leaders in our city. We need to hold the mayor accountable. The mayor and the police commissioner have the authority to exact the changes in the police department that we seek. As you know, we go back from Arthur Miller to Randy Evans. We have all of the recommendations that need to be made to change the police department. What we need for them to do is review everything that we've created in the past and implement it. There has to be accountability. You see, at the precinct level, there's no reason why the precinct commander cannot hold his troops accountable for how they interact with the citizens in that particular district.
Well, we're also here with Councilmember John Luke. Clearly, people of Asian Pacific Island are affected by the issue of stereotypes, of profiling, of racism. What can the council do in response to this particular incident, but what will surely be another one if there isn't some systemic redress?
Councilman Van and I and many of our colleagues in the council, we've already begun to study this in a task force within the council with the speaker to see what kind of legislative remedies we can enact. And we're also part of a three-level task force of local, state, and federal elected officials. It is a crying shame that after Amadou Diallo, none of those changes that have been recommended have actually been implemented. This time, nothing's going to be swept under the rug. We're going to confront all of the issues head on with the goal of enacting changes from the top on down so that things like what happened on November 25th to Sean Bell and his friends will never be repeated.
Councilman Van, what specific reforms need to be instituted in the future and what needs to be done now?
Right, there's one reform that we've been asking for 30 years, and it's still top on the agenda. We know the relationship between the district attorney and the police necessarily must be a close one in most cases. But when there are allegations against police, it should not be the district attorney's role to have to investigate police because they have to work with them. There should be an independent prosecutor, perhaps in the attorney general's office, to have the sole responsibility of investigating all police corruption, police brutality cases. Take it out of the police department, take it out of the district attorney's office. It has to be with a separate independent office.
As a legal aid lawyer on a day-to-day basis, I see the seemingly lesser indignities and injustices that Black and Latino and Asian youth experience. They are cursed at. There are racial epithets. They are hit. There's a policing apparatus that has not changed, certainly in my lifetime, in the way it responds to people of color. Is there any recommendation relative to these day-to-day activities of the police in the communities that you can also see beginning to press on and implement, which perhaps would create the discipline and accountability that would prevent the tragedies that led to the death of a Sean Bell?
My take on that is you cannot legislate, nor can you establish a policy that will change a person's mind and or their heart. However, you can control their behavior. Police department is a paramilitary organization. They have a top-down structure. If the top man, your police commissioner, directing their precinct commander to establish the values that determine promotion and movement based on how they engage their community, if they can establish a system of criteria that would force their policemen to respect and to act professionally in our community as opposed to how they're treating Black and Latino kids now. If the precinct commander is somewhat sensitive to the community and he imparts that to his men and women on the police department, then they behave accordingly.
John Liu, many, many years ago, one of the recommendations of the Black Panther Party at that time was, what about real community policing, setting up precinct boards that police would be accountable to? You are in a very large immigrant community district, which also suffers tremendous abuses. Do you think that's part of a recommendation that might discipline and make accountable the policing apparatus?
In my community, and I believe in most others across the city, there are precinct community councils where, although they lack the teeth in terms of any kind of enforcement or adjudication, they serve as a strong bridge between the community members and the police. That doesn't mean that there still aren't issues out there. The issues of this type cannot be addressed by the precinct community councils that we have today. They must be addressed from the top on down, beginning with the commissioner's office and the mayor.
That is a good point. And if more people participated in those precinct councils, it is a point where you have an opportunity to affect and impact upon the precinct commander, the will and feelings of the community. And very often they're very sensitive to that, or become sensitive to that, because they don't want you going over their head. They don't like you communicating with the police commissioner about things that are happening in their district. So it's an important point. If the community comes out in great numbers and deal with their precinct commander, it can affect the attitude of that precinct commander, and therefore they'll be transferred down to the police office.
What would you say about making a civilian complaint review board that is meaningful?
I think that's one of the top recommendations that I saw being passed out of the group that came together around Sean Bell. The CCRB has to be reformed. It has to be able to subpoena, have investigations, have public hearings. They have to strengthen the CCRB. Very, very critical role that has to take place.
Former Assemblyman, now Councilmember Alvan, thank you for speaking with us. Here with one of the consummate litigators in the civil rights venue in this country, Ted Shaw from the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund. Ted, oh my God, deja vu all over again, again, and again. From a legal perspective, what is to be done?
From the legal perspective, the courts have been more and more conservative, as everybody knows, in recent years, and they've boxed us out of attacking systemic problems in the police department. I think that we have to keep fighting the legal fights, but what we really have to do more than anything else is exactly what's going on today, which is hit the streets, organize, march, put political pressure on elected officials, on those who hold the reins of economic power, because indirectly they can also put pressure on those who can bring about change. So this is a wonderful day. It's a sad occasion that brings us here, but we're so tired of these killings going on and on and on in black and brown communities in ways that they don't occur in other communities. My view is that what's behind all of this is an occupation mentality on the part of too many people in the police department, largely informed by the so-called war on drugs, which is a war on people of color, which then makes everybody in the black community suspect and in brown communities suspect, and it defines the relationship between the police and people in black and brown communities. I think we have to come up with another way of attacking the so-called war on drugs that will totally change the way the police interact with black and brown communities.
I just want to take this a little further. Just on December 4th, there was an argument that should scandalize this nation before the Supreme Court that essentially can take us back to Plessy v. Ferguson. It really challenges the premises of Brown v. Board of Education. Does this have anything to do with that kind of context of intolerance and discrimination, racial animus in this country?
Those two cases are important. They, in effect, are part of a broader ideological struggle, which would make it illegal to voluntarily and consciously address racial inequality in this country. And it's part of a tapestry in which the problems of race are dealt with by denial. And that spills over into the problems of the relationships also along racial lines with the police and black and brown communities. So, yes, I think there's a connection.
Ted Shaw, from, a legal perspective, what do you think the recommendations are that at least in this case can begin to bring justice for Trent Benefelt, Joseph Guzman, and, of course, Sean Bell?
Well, I think we need to look at the issues of systemic reform. At the same time, other people may disagree on this, but the call for a special prosecutor is really a statement about a lack of faith in the prosecutor's office. My own view is that you ought to allow and put pressure on the local prosecutor to prosecute and then go, if necessary, to special prosecutor or the feds. But we don't want to limit ourselves in terms of only having one bite at the apple. So it's important that we get all of the resources we can to bring about a fair resolution of this. At the same time, and we really need to politically organize and do what we're doing today. I think that this investigation has been going more slowly than it ought to. We have a long history of the police, when they're involved in an incident like this, being shielded for long periods of time, and it gives them an opportunity to try to get their stories on the same page. And we would see a much quicker indictment or resolution if we're talking about citizens who are arrested and charged with crimes. I don't think there ought to be a double-sided system of justice.
Ted Shaw, thank you for being here, as always, and thank you, more importantly, in some ways, for being there for communities on the legal front every day.
Thank you.
Continue to move forward. Do not stop.
Let's go. Come on, back up.
Let's go.
Step it up.
Come on,
Bruce. Let's go.
We're speaking with Minister Kevin Mohammed of Malcolm X's mosque in Harlem, just as the crowd has broken through the barricades, taken over Fifth Avenue, and stopped all traffic. The community broke through the barricades. I think that's incredible. It's a real show of people's power. What do you think?
Our community's in a powder keg and ready to explode. We don't want to do it the wrong way, but the right way, and this is the right way.
This is kind of deja vu all over again. What do we do this time to get justice for black and
white people? We have to keep it as a movement, not just a march, but a movement. So whether anything is happening or not, we change the system. Bottom line, stay united, totally united on the issues and the cause that brings us together.
What needs to be changed here?
Just a little bit of everything, but definitely the mindset of the system that is around America, not just New York. After this, we continue to organize into smaller groups and larger groups, because it's not going to be the last show on Bell. It's going to happen again. It already has.
Thank you, Minister Mohammed. We were just speaking with the Minister Kevin Mohammed, now Minister of Malcolm X's mosque in Harlem, and the crowd has broken through the barricades and has taken over Fifth Avenue and has closed down traffic. We're here with a very courageous man who has experienced police terror tactics himself, Abner Louima, who's going to tell us why he came in from Florida to be at this March for Justice for Sean Bell. What brought you into the streets of New York today, sir?
Well, the same cause that really we're all marching today. We just want to send a clear message that we're not going to take any more Sean Bell. Enough is enough, because that's too many shots, and enough is enough. This is not target practice.
You realize that for many of us, you've become a hero of opposition to a system that victimizes people of color all too often. What do you have to say to the people here in New York? And by the way, how are you physically these days?
Physically, thanks God, I'm okay. And I would just want to tell them that to stay strong and then keep the faith up, because we have to get justice for Sean Bell, because we want to put an end on those kind of procedures.
They try to demonize you after they hurt you, the police. They have tried to defame Sean Bell and his friends by also saying there was a fourth gunman, there was somebody with a gun. So what do you think about the constant tactics of trying to demonize the victims?
They always try to cover up with whatever they're doing. That's the rule of silence. But if there is a fourth man, they have to prove there was a fourth man. Because you know they will try everything to prove the action.
Again, thank you very much, sir, and I really commend you for your strength.
Thank you.
Really, it is quite an honor. We just caught up with Abner Louima, who is long been regarded as one of the pillars of strength in response to police viciousness and terrorism in the streets of this city.
And you've been listening to a New York City march protesting the police killing of Sean Bell. This has been a Building Bridges, your Community and Labor Report special, produced by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.